the bump and run, the Bristol move.
That's aggressive, but it's that's good. Good heart racing.
Oh!
He puts him out of the groove there.
Oh, man!
Will he get the bumper? Yes, he does. Here comes Logano. Logano on the inside. A drag race. They're sideways. And it's going to be Logano getting the win.
The back end of the 18 kick out.
Yeah, he got into it right there.
Moved him out of the way.
It's almost too early to be racing that hard for the lead, wasn't it?
Never too early to be racing for the lead.
At Bristol.
At Bristol.
Man, this is one of the biggest wins of my career.
It's the bump and run,
baby!
Welcome to the Bump and Run podcast. I'm your host, Mike D. White, joined by my two best friends, Matt the Statman Riley and Eric Daytona Ron. Hope you guys had a great weekend. Hope you guys had yourselves a Christopher Bell type of weekend. He was the big winner down in Thunder Valley for the Bristol Dirt Race. And our man, Daytona Ron, had boots on the ground. We'll hear all about it. Make sure you like, share, subscribe. Podcast available on all podcast platforms every Monday night. Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, Amazon, you know all the deal. And YouTube every Tuesday. Of course, we're a day late because Eric was traveling yesterday. Fellas, how's your Easter weekend? Specifically, Eric, glad to see you survived your Easter weekend in Bristol. How the hell was it, man?
Oh boy, was that a fun weekend, boys. The drive down and back is always stressful, you know, towing a camper, and it's not a big camper either, so it gets moved around in the wind, and most of the trip is just entirely down Interstate 81, top of a mountain, so, you know, white knuckling it. I'm a little sore from just the stress of just driving, but, you know, once you're there, and once you're at the race, that all disappeared. It all went away, and it was just time to relax, enjoy some racing, and have some fun. And boy, did Bristol! It provided the trucks. Oh my God! Like it just the heats. I think Saturday is my favorite day down there, and you know, my girlfriend Dana would agree. Like sometimes we had more fun at the truck race than the heat race, you know, than you do on the actual cup day. But man, did Sunday provide, you know, just a hell of a race. And it, to me, I know I saw out there about dirt, is it going to come back with this, with that, top three races I've ever been to live. And I say live because when you're there, you see everything, you smell everything, you even get hit with some things. I brought home a bunch of the clumps that came through the fence.
Hell yeah.
Smacked me and my girlfriend when we were down there. So I got a whole bunch of the Bristol dirt from the racetrack. I'm gonna divvy it up, and you know, everyone that comes up to the Harding Hole on Sundays and you know, as part of our whole little NASCAR crew, I'm gonna give you a little vial of a Bristol dirt as a little appreciation for becoming, you know, such big fans of the sport. So that was pretty cool. And you know, just the fans there, a group of these, 18-year-old kids or whatever, young kids, like they came over, saw me all excited no one was really getting crazy there besides me. They're like, oh, look at this fucking guy. I'm going to get, you know, someone else that wants to get crazy and wild. So a little bit of my younger years did come out and chugged a whole bunch of beers during the races. got us a couple subscribers, hopefully. Met a young gentleman from Michigan who was sitting next to me, and hopefully he becomes a fan and listens to this. And I think he already subscribed. I might have hit it on his phone in the stands. Said, here you go, this is us right here.
Dude, Eric, that's the way you got to do it. You got to just hit subscribe on their phone. That way they're already set up that you don't even have to worry about it, you know? One day.
Yeah, the Southern hospitality was great. You know, we met these people. They had a whole bar camper set up a little ways down from our campsite. Walking distance right over there. They had the, you know, bar stools, come on up, where, you know, they had a big old jug of homemade Tennessee moonshine. So we were swigging on that on Thursday night, got a little bombed on the homemade shine. They had amazing, all these kind of pudding shots, jello shots, this, that, whiskeys. And it was what I needed. I think coming out of the winter, this was kind of the jumpstart out of that yucky, you know, seasonal depression, not seeing the sun forever. But it was well worth the trip. And I highly suggest, if they do it again, I know it didn't get the greatest reviews and people have their, you know, remarks on it, which I agree. That's your get to it live. Just get to it live. And I think you'll appreciate it a little bit more as far as the on track prep that goes into it. Is when you're there, you're seeing a commercial break. They're not showing you what I'm seeing in the grandstands of all of the Packer cars going out there, the water truck going out there, all the people fixing the hole down by where the haulers came in. There was a huge divot where the haulers were coming in. They had to grade that down, put new dirt. So, like, those guys put a lot of time and effort to put on a show, and I thought they did an excellent job. And I'll tell you what, I'll probably go back again next year if it's on the dirt.
I tell you what, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I tell you what, to your point about the track prep and stuff, it looked like it was prepped the best it's ever been. Like, they just keep constantly improving and improving. And I feel like we saw it in the product, too. And it's kind of unfortunate. I feel like, I don't know if it's on Easter or what is the problem, but, like, it's unfortunate the grandstands weren't more full, you know?
That was a thing that it concerned me on Friday. It was about halfway through the day, but I mean, granted, here I didn't leave my camper all day Friday.
Yeah,
it rained and was windy all day long on Friday. Like, literally, it did not stop at all, and that probably deterred a few people away from going earlier. But the weather for Sunday was great. Like, you still could have. I don't know, man. Like, the crowd wasn't there, but I think Easter Sunday. Down in the South, I don't think it really affects it that much because they have a whole big thing down there and people were, you know, to go to. They have the whole thing. So, like, if that is your excuse, you don't have one.
Yeah.
They have a whole ceremony there that you could go to and do. And, like, I get the family thing and all that, but it was – I know I might have been a little buzzed up at the time when I texted it, but when you guys asked me how the grandstands looked on the inside, our local hockey arena, the Mini Penguins, I said, there's probably more people at a Mini Pens game than are inside here right now. It wasn't that bad. I was being a little sarcastic, but they were so spread out all over the place. That place is huge. And I think no matter what, it was going to look a little bad because how massive that place is. What?
So a couple things that I wanted to just add on to it too is, like, because Eric and I went down, a group of us went down about, well, what year was that, Eric?
16.
So what, 7-8 years ago we went down, and we got there in the middle of the night, and they had the track lights were still on, and I just remember that place is so magical. Like, I just hold Bristol like so near and dear to my heart, because not only is the racing always amazing, it always has been, it always will be, but the place itself, like, it's TV pictures don't do it justice. When you're coming up through on that main drag and the mountain range clears and here's Bristol Motor Speedway and it's just literally tucked in between like mountains, and then you get into it and it's so much bigger than it looks on TV. Like, I don't know how to explain it. Eric, obviously you were just there yesterday. You walk in from the concourse outside the grandstands, you get to the grandstands and it's just massive. It's massive. I've been in some giant football stadiums. I went to Penn State. I was in the biggest college football stadium in the world at Penn State, and Bristol's bigger. Or at least it feels bigger. It's unlike anything in the world.
Go ahead, Whitey.
Well, I was going to say two things. Is it because it's the last great Coliseum? How many people does Beaver Stadium fit for Penn State?
110.
Okay,
but
so
they went over to about 115 before.
Yeah. So I looked up the numbers. Bristol seats 153,000.
There you go.
That's why.
Yeah.
That's another 40,000 people on top of it, possibly.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, man.
But it's where it's set. The mountains are so tall and kind of short, but they're like all around in like these little tall, big little like ant hills all around.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Like, so all you see is these little anthill mountains and these valleys. And next thing you know, like, you go through and you get out of one of those valleys where those mountains are alongside of you. And all of a sudden, bam, There's this huge Coliseum out of nowhere. You just you don't expect it to be there. That's why it looks so big.
Yeah. We literally and got there.
It's on a hill.
Yeah.
And thank God for their tram systems, because anywhere you go there, oh, if you ain't in shape,
yeah,
you have your legs are going to be sore afterward. Put it that
way. It's such a spectacle. Like I said, we got there in the middle of the night, and you know, everyone but Eric, who's driving, was sleeping. And as soon as like we see the track, it's like adrenaline just rushed. Like, we couldn't go back to sleep. Like, we got to our spot, set up and everything. It was like hard to fall back asleep for the next day because we were just so psyched. I mean, that place is awesome. To say what Eric said before, you know, get to a Bristol race, whether it's dirt or concrete, get to a Bristol race. It's that place is unbelievable.
You guys got me jealous. I need to go down and see this place.
Either, boys. It's literally right down 81. There's one. It's 81 the entire way.
Yeah.
You get one exit off of 81 and you're at the racetrack. It's that easy.
I was looking on maps the other day because I was like, man, how far is it? And I'm like, oh, you just literally drive all the way down 81 to like Roanoke, right? And then you cut over.
Yeah. Yep.
Something like that.
I met this couple. They were from Prince Edward Island up in Canada. They were actually on a 20-day trip with their big camper they had, where they were going. They hit Bristol. They're going to Martinsville next week, and they were at Richmond last week. So they're going to do – they came down. They hit three races before they head back up. So nice. I thought that was pretty cool, you know, coming all the way from Canada to come down and see the racing. And, you know, they enjoyed it. They had a great time. And everyone I talked to there at the racetrack – had a absolute incredible time there.
I tell you what, we need to get an RV and just do a road trip with a whole bunch of us.
You can rent them, and I've been looking.
You can rent them.
Yeah. I think that's the play. We got to do it. So, I would just wish it wasn't on Easter. If it was on another weekend, I'd be like, yes, let's fucking go. But it is what it is. Let's jump into the NASCAR news, though. We got some stuff to talk about.
The Bump and Run NASCAR news.
So we just have a handful of stories to go through. One of the big ones from this week: NASCAR team owners didn't show up for a scheduled meeting regarding the TV deal with NASCAR, essentially boycotting for better collective bargaining. But remember, they're not a union, because that's a dirty word. But essentially, and I was listening to Denny Hamlin's podcast earlier today. The owners want more money. They want a bigger cut of the pie. And apparently a big part of it too is the fact that if you're in last place for 3 years with the same charter, you could lose that charter. So there's no guarantee of what these charters are going to be worth or any of that kind of stuff in the future. And so they're just kind of asking for more protection as an owner. And I completely agree. I feel like we need it. Look at every other sport. They have players' unions and stuff like that. So what do you guys think about that? What do you guys think about the teams just not showing up because they feel like the deal is not going any forward?
You got to fight for the right to party, right? If they feel like they're not getting what they deserve. And I am actually on the side of the teams, you know, at this point is – you know, they want a larger cut of the pie. And I know it's hard too, you know, with the I believe the contracts or whatever this is only scheduled through the same time that the TV deal is ready to be renewed as well. So everyone's kind of waiting to see what the new TV deals are going to be, how much money is going to be involved with that too. So we're really at like a weird point right now, almost like a holding point right now, where we don't know yet. But I don't blame the owners for getting together and saying, let's hold out. Let's do what we have to do to make our point known.
Yeah, I'm with you, where I'm with the teams and the drivers. And it's just like you look at other sports, like how much money are these owners making in the NFL off of the people that are actually on the field, the gladiators themselves. And I'm always going to take the side of the gladiator. And, you know, those are the ones putting on the show. Those are the ones making you the money. Those are the ones out there, you know, working their asses off behind the wheel of that race car. And, you know, look at how much work goes into building that race car. You know, those crew chiefs and the whole team, everyone working on that, like they just feel like they want a little bit more. They're the ones doing the grit work. And, you know, I think they're getting a little tired of, you know, the top brass always taking the money. And I think it will help improve racing. I think maybe, you know, let them have a little bit more and see what they could do with it. And I'll always side with the Gladiator.
Yeah, I agree 100% on all of that. And a piece I really didn't think about until I was listening to, again, Denny Hamlin's podcast. And I was listening to DBC today, too, which I usually don't get to do on Mondays. So because we're recording on Tuesday, I got to hear their takes before we record. And they brought up the whole point of the charter value and stuff. You know, right now they're asking for millions and millions of dollars for charters, like double digits for charters, and no one knows what the charter is actually going to be worth after this TV deal and stuff too. So like that plays a big part of it too, where at least if now, you know, the TV deal, hey, we're going to get a bigger cut. Well, now the charter value kind of makes more sense than it does right now, especially for prospective owners. We talk about Dale Jr. always talking about wanting to get in a cup, but the charter is too expensive right now, you know, and right now there's no guarantee. And even they brought up Rick Ware Racing and stuff too. You know, Rick Ware, we dog on them all the time. We dog on Cody Ware, and we'll get to him in a little bit. But, you know, if their slowest car is last in points of all the charter teams for 3 years straight, they lose that charter. So now it's like they don't even actually own it. They're just leasing it, and it's worth this money. But if they lose it, then they're out all of their money anyway. So it the more I learn about it and the more, you know, insiders talk about it, it's greasy. Yeah, it's yeah. Fucking greasy. Yeah.
It's progress. It's very,
it sounds like a greasy, greasy deal going on right
it's
now.
It's a very imperfect system.
Yeah. Because
that needs to be worked out.
It was a knee-jerk reaction. It worked at the time, but now that time is running out.
Yeah.
And other things, other variables are starting to pop up. And now they're gonna have to, you know, second guess and rework how a charter is worked and bought, and they have to be open about everything. And I think that's where it gets a little weird too, is okay, where's the money going? Who's going to get it? How are you going to do this? I want to know about this appeals panel. And like, I think this is going to be a real, well, I mean, I always like to stay optimistic about it, but man, boys, this next couple of years for our sport and like this TV deal, I don't think people realize how big, like this is, I think it's, This is a lot riding on our sport right now.
Oh, sure. Yeah. This TV deal sure. is make or break for a lot of different pieces of this puzzle.
Yeah. And like, I as much as I like not talking about off the track stuff, you know what I mean? Like, you want to stick to talking about racing and what happened on the weekend. Like, I feel like this is one of the things where it's like, I want to know more and keep me updated, NASCAR. And like, what do you like? This is something that should be talked about more, and I don't think it's getting enough attention that it should.
Yeah, again, you know, like, I don't want to sound like, oh, the world is burning and all this stuff,
exactly,
but like,
exactly, but.
But when you look at all the pieces of the pie and how the sport is structured, like, this TV deal.
They have to go to work, man. They have to go to work. They have to figure it out. And they will. Listen. They're gonna figure it out. They're not gonna let too many people's lives depend on this sport for them to just let this go wrong. Well, they'll get it right. They'll figure it out. But we're in crunch time now. We've been talking about this for a couple of years, and now we're in crunch time.
The only thing that worries me is NASCAR wasn't always the biggest form of motorsports in this country. IndyCar was. In fact, IndyCar was bigger in Pennsylvania than anything. Like the Pocono race was considered the Indy 500 of the East, and it took some weird negotiations and some angry teams, and then you have the split. And I don't want to, you know, I don't want to sound like doom and gloom, but I don't know if NASCAR could survive something like that, you know, because IndyCar almost didn't either.
It's just the structure. Structure needs to be changed. They need to find a different structure to keep the sport alive. At this point, what they've been doing, it's just been a Band-Aid. And now that Band-Aid got a little waterlogged and it lost all of its, you know, its purpose.
Yeah. And you want to know what? We'll see how SRX does on Thursday. I hate when you wash your hands too many times and that Band-Aid. Barely sticking on there. And it's like, God damn it. You know, and then still, and then you start seeing that black gunk around the glue that's stuck on your finger.
You have to throw the Band-Aid out.
Yeah. Okay. Anyways, sorry. Eric brought up the appeals board during that rant, and that leads on to our next piece. Colleague lost their appeal. Hendrick won kind of, and Colleague didn't. And then later on in the week, William Byron and Alex Bowman were fined after last week when their cars were taken for inspection at the NASCAR R&D Center. It was a greenhouse violation for modifying a part where the windshield wiper can be mounted. They've been docked points. Their interim crew chiefs were suspended, I do believe. And it seems like, to me, an outside party, NASCAR wasn't happy about losing that appeals board to Hendrick. And now they're getting ticky-tacky. Little ticky-tacky.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're still a couple weeks out from spring turkey season, hunting season. Mm-hmm. Looks like it doesn't look like. I'll tell you what happened. NASCAR went head hunting a couple weeks early in my mind. They went head hunting. They went and they found William Byron and Alex Bowman, and they brought them to the R&D center, and somebody told someone, don't let those two cars leave until you find something.
Yeah, I'm sure the 5 and the 9 went after Bristol too.
And if they didn't, they're going to. I hope it happens before Chase gets back. Yeah. Do it while Barry's. They're probably going to wait until Chase gets back and then whack them.
Well, you want to know what? They got their points back, and NASCAR's taking them one at a time after. I don't know how I feel about it. I did learn something though.
How I feel about it. I feel like it's bullshit. That's how I feel about it.
Well, you want to know what? Should we get into the weeds with this one?
We could.
I think the appeals board was bullshit that they gave them their points back, but left them with a fine and the crew chiefs being suspended. I think that whole entire situation was bullshit. It should have been either 100% or zero. One or the other, no weird middle ground. So I understand why NASCAR is pissed. Like NASCAR was made a fool in front of the appeals board, and now they're getting their points back. So like, I think it's shitty to go headhunting, but at the same time, I think the appeals board blew that call so bad that now NASCAR is kind of forced to do something, you know?
Yeah.
The appeals board made themselves look like assholes. The appeals board ruined it for the appeals board.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they finally had something where like, okay, NASCAR isn't the sole dictator. Whatever NASCAR says goes. We have this opportunity as a race team to state our case in front of a jury of our peers and people that know what, you know, racing and what it takes. So this is a win for us as the teams. Like, we have this appeals process. This is great. You know, we have this thing to fight the NASCAR corporate, you know, and the main brass. And now they go and do this. This just completely takes all the credit away from them. And to me, the secret nature of this appeals process and the inspection process, it has to come to an end.
Yeah.
These storylines, they're great for us fans. We're talking about it. It gives us storylines. It's fun for us, but it's also, it's huge to maintain the integrity of this sport by talking about this and being open about it. Like, I really do feel the integrity of our sport is up in the air right now. I don't know how to feel about this. Right now, I feel like, hey, maybe our sport has a little favorites or has a way of cheating the system, or NASCAR, like everyone's talking about, oh, they're cheating. There's a script. There's this, there's that. Well, when this shit kind of happens, I can't stand it, because it does leave that little gap. And all the people that want to blow that door open are running for that little gap and doing whatever they can to make that little gap into a huge wide open doorway. And you never know how long it'll take for it to be that way.
I feel like it delegitimizes things a little bit, you know?
Yeah, it does.
And
100% it does. Like, Colleague didn't deserve that. Like, what was it? All 8 of HMS's
movers got taken
one
back.
One of 4 only. So which one there seems like it was intentional versus not intentional?
Exactly.
The team with all of them modified or the team with only one of them modified? And what did they race that prior week?
And at the same time, too, what was said in that appeals board? There is no record. Right. So I was
the problem I have.
Harvick brought it up. Harvick said that it should be televised like we said last week.
Court TV. NASCAR Court TV. So if you want a really great in-depth behind the scenes look at the appeals process, go to Denny Hamlin's podcast and listen to, he dropped a special episode last Thursday talking about every single thing that happened. And honestly, after he talked about and pled his case, I was really surprised that his penalty upheld too. So it's a good listen. Obviously listen after you listen to us, because I don't want you guys turning us away. But we got more news to talk about. The All-Star Race format has been announced. I have it on my phone as a screenshot. I'm gonna warn you, I didn't actually look at the screenshot. I just screenshotted it.
It's pretty similar to what just went down this past weekend in Bristol. There's gonna have some heats. The heat one will set the inside row. Heat two will set the outside row, and you have a 100 lap open.
Yep. So Friday we're gonna have practice and qualifying and a pit crew challenge. The pit crew challenge will you'll qualify with will be based on pit stop time only.
Thank you, Dale Jr. for that.
Yeah.
I hope it was better. Is it the same type of pit crew challenge that they had last year? Because remember what it was like? Oh my god!
It was a weird drag race thing. Yeah.
Bad.
That was bad. On paper, that was one of the best ideas of all time. And then the execution of it was the worst.
The worst execution.
Yeah, because they had to do it. Let the cars go on the track first and do a lap. Don't do it just right there. They need to do the lap first and come in like a real pit stop.
They did it backwards. They should have did the lap, come flying down pit road, no speed limit, slide into the box, and then do the pit stop. But no, so the pit crew challenge will determine qualifying order, and it's going to be based on a four-tire pit stop, no fuel. Results determine starting lineup for the All-Star Heat races and the All-Star Open. So then the heat races are going to be on Saturday. Like Eric said, we're going to have two different heat races, 60 laps each. Results of heat one set the All-Star race inside row. Results of heat two set the outside row. And then on Sunday, of course, we have the All-Star race, and that will be a 100 lap feature. Competition break on or around lap 40. So we're going to get a comp caution, and top two finishers transfer to the All-Star race. Let's see. Transfers. So basically the same.
It's going to be super competitive because it's North Wilkesboro, man. I'm sure a lot of those guys never got to drive North Wilkesboro.
They want that trophy. I'd want that trophy.
Yeah, I would too.
And of course, those pre-races, kind of the similar to all the previous years where you have the different heats to get some qualifiers in, and then everyone that wins is automatically in too. So,
Eric, I've got a question for you. If anyone's been listening to us for a long time, first of all, thank you. But second of all, you know, one of the biggest arguments we've had on this show was between you two about when they were talking about reviving North Wilkesboro. Oh. And Eric, I have a question for you. Is Whitey allowed to watch the All-Star race?
You know,
I don't remember the stipulations.
He doesn't deserve to.
Right. I don't know if he deserves to.
The amount of just absolute hate coming out of that mouth was that was one of your most epic, passionate rants. And like, how do you feel after that now? Has your heart changed? Because Mayan, I stood.
Yeah,
yours was on the right side of history.
Yeah, I was on the right side.
I'll double down right now. Go back and watch any fucking race from North Wilkesboro from the 90s. It's one of the most boring fucking tracks you'll ever see. The All-Star race is going to be garbage. There's nothing around that track to draw anyone in. And North Wilkesboro will be off the schedule in less than 5 years. Guarantee
it. The track is the draw. What do you always say about what gets us? What do corporations do and all these companies do? They nostalgia. Go after the nostalgia.
Oh, yeah.
So, ooh, look at this. When I was young, that why do you think all neon and all 90s shit's coming out now?
Oh, yeah.
They're going after us. That's what we had when we were kids. So the track itself is bringing people there. And I think it's going to put on a show. I mean, we'll see with this car and what the changes with this package that they had, you know, and I think I think we're going to see some good racing, and it's the all-star race. We might see a little bit of Ty Dillon at the Clash from a few years back.
Now that would make things interesting. I would love that. Listen, I want the race to be a success. And on that Monday, if it is, I'll come on here and I'll sing its praises. But until then, it's unproven in my eyes and I'm going by history. And there's a reason why it's not on the race schedule or wasn't on the race schedule for 20
years.
How about
instead of singing its praises, you have to sing the North Carolina national anthem? Do each state have an anthem?
I'm sure they have a state song or something we could look up. I'll figure it out.
If it's a rip roaring success, you have to come on this show and sing the North Carolina state song.
All right, and if I can't find it, we'll go with the Tar Heels and we'll do whatever their fucking alma mater song is. Someone reminded me of that when we get closer to the all-star race. Let's see. Chase Briscoe apparently might need surgery on his broken finger. No update on that yet, but he wheeled that car all day yesterday with a broken finger, got himself a top five finish, finishing fifth.
He'll be fine.
Yeah. Scumbag. He fucked my fantasy day.
This is two years in a row that in the last coming laps he takes someone out in front of him. Like,
Blaney fans were pissed. Welcome to my world.
I chirped a Briscoe. This girl was wearing a Briscoe hat on the way out. And she's talking. I chirped the shit out of her. I said, I said, look at that. 2 years in a row, taking out one of the leaders on the last couple laps. She said something. I said, they ain't too. I was giving Dana's like, Eric, cut it out. I'm like, nah, fuck that scumbag.
That reminds me, friend of the show, Charlie Warner. We met him down in Daytona a couple years ago. He sent me a DM on Twitter. He wanted to know, were you the guy that Freddie Kraft was talking about on DBC this week? Freddie Kraft gave his What an Idiot award to a guy that was flipping off Joey Logano for the entire truck race and the entire cup race. Every lap. Was that you?
No, I don't think it was me, but not every lap, but I would probably say at least 20 to 25 laps, the bird was out at Adam, for sure.
So it might have been you, but it also might have been 20,000 other people there, too.
That's true, too.
When Logano spun and wrecked and went into the garage area, it was right in front of where I was sitting. Dude, it's like when Kyle Busch used to wreck, but now when Logano wrecks, the whole crowd just stood cheering. Up cheering. Yeah.
Well, I'm hoping Freddie saw you, and if not, it was a kindred spirit that you have down in Bristol. And then we have to get to a piece of serious news, and I hate talking about this type of shit because it shouldn't happen, but Cody Ware indefinitely suspended by NASCAR after being arrested on assault charges on Monday. He faces two charges, assault on a female and assault by strangulation. I don't think we really have to comment on that other than... we'll see what happens in the courts. I don't know.
No comment from me.
Yeah, I don't want to speculate on things like that, but that's why he missed this Sunday. Yeah, his brother got busted for the same thing. He got arrested for assault too a couple years ago, which he was reinstated after a NASCAR program where whatever. Let's see. What are they called? What is it? Like
rehab program.
Yeah, like the rehab program. But
Anger
management. You have to do a class, anger management class. It depends on what you did, your drug and alcohol.
Anyways,
NASCAR has programs to help people, and that is great on NASCAR's part that they do have these programs and these things to help their drivers and I guess their employees. It is their business. So shout out to NASCAR for having that for them to use.
You want to what? And I'll say this too. I hope Cody Ware does get some kind of help and stuff because he's had some anger issues out on the track and stuff. I'm sure he could benefit from all sorts of resources.
I've had some back and forths with him on Twitter.
Yeah, I tried twice and he blocked both of my account and the Bumper Run account. So anyways, we got a race weekend to get back into. The truck race, Joey Logano absolutely dominated. I didn't get a chance to see it. Eric, you were there live. Matt, did you get a chance to see any of the truck race?
No, we had Saturday night was a huge UFC card, so we had some people over for that. So I had it on my laptop, but if I told you I saw five laps of that truck race, that's probably on the high end.
Yeah. I went to go see the Dungeons and Dragons movie on Saturday. It was fucking sick. Highly suggest it. And I thought about you, Matt. Did you know
why? Why?
Because Cinemark has the UFC fights. Did you know that?
Oh, yo. So yes, I found that out. We talked about that on Saturday night. Yeah. I didn't know that, but, I said the same thing. I'll tell you guys, if they provide alcohol, I'm in.
I think you can drink at Cinemark. I'm not sure. I mean, we used to when we were teenagers. Cinemark
now. I think they did change that recently.
And
sounds like something I'm going to have to look into.
Or you just pull what we used to do in high school and drink some beers in the parking lot and sneak a few in your pants on the way in, you know, like, I mean, there's ways. I thought about sneaking into it at the end of Dungeons and Dragons, though. It was still going on. I got out at like 11 o'clock. I'm like, fuck it. I might make the main event. But that guilt got me. Anyways, we had a cup race. Christopher Bell led 100 laps, led once for 100 laps. He was the big winner. 2 hours, 40 minutes, 40 seconds. We saw 14 cautions for 71 laps. Four lead changes among four different drivers, so not a whole lot of movement up front. Bell, Reddick, Austin Dillon, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., and Chase Briscoe, your top five, fellas. Let's jump into the race grades.
It's our NASCAR weekend race grade.
And let's do a contrast. We'll start with Matt, who watched it on television, then we'll go to Eric, who watched it in person. Matt, what did you think about the race weekend?
I gave it an A. You know, pretty much everything that we discussed before, you know, is what I was going to say. You know, I loved the racing. Third time is a charm. I guess it seemed like the drivers had a little more control than they did the first 2 years. It also seemed like the team that prepped the track has it finally figured out, which is a shame because if you read the tea leaves, all signs are pointing towards that being the last Bristol dirt race that we're going to see, unfortunately. But yeah, I liked it. I gave it an A. I was also, it was late. I was also tired. It was a long Easter day. So I probably didn't get that bump up to an A plus where it probably deserved, but still listen, A is a fantastic, fantastic top of the line grade. Loved what I saw. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what, Matt? I didn't really think about that. Like when we were talking earlier, Whitey, we were talking about like the Easter weekend and the crowd and all that. Just even the people at home watching on TV, you were just had a hell of a day in front of you. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And have it at night like that. I didn't think about that. Yeah, it's just a long day to you know. I know we always talk when there's some Sunday night races like that. It's tough to stay up and watch those races. So yeah, I didn't think about that. Just the whole holiday in general, being at home and just the events of the day.
Yeah,
I tell you what, I thought the race was perfectly linked, though, because it ended like right at 10 o'clock. I was nervous it was going to go till 11. I was going to be a sleepy bear on Monday morning at work, and I wasn't. I got a full night's sleep. I was happy.
I remember leaving the stadium and being – I turned to my girlfriend. I'm like, yo, that race was only like a little over 2 hours, I think. Like that was in and out and like – that I loved the length of that race for sure. Was anywhere under, you get under 3 hours, that's a great, great race for me. Race time.
Yeah, I agree.
I gave it an A as well. It was one of the best races I've ever been to. Nonstop action. Like there was not, I had zero time. I was listening to, you know, the scanners through the app on my phone and I couldn't even look down to change like my radio channel to driver or else I was going to miss something going on track. Spins left and right. Cars doing 360s, keeping on going. There was times I'm yelling, I'm screaming. I'm like, where's the caution? There's a car rounding the wall. What are you doing? Throw the car. Like it took them forever to throw the cautions. The drivers were the one caution. I forget who it was. I think they were waiting for Corey LaJoy to get it back going. And I'm like, they better throw this caution. What are they doing? So between that and just the battles, oh my God, like he got him in the wall when they started getting real high and some of the drivers, they couldn't handle it up there. And it was honest to God, top three race I've ever been to, nonstop action. I was the crowd there. You know what I mean? I didn't need anyone else around me. I was, you know, I think this new way that we've watched the races with the headsets and listening and being in there, like I was in my own world, cracking beers, just in my own world there. And I almost felt like, you know, I was almost in like a trance, like watching that race. Yep. Like I could not keep my eyes off of it. And it was, to me, if you didn't like that, you're just not a fan of racing. I think someone said that. It might've been Kenny Wallace or I forget who's Tony Stewart.
Yeah, he's sitting on the broadcast
in the booth. What you were saying, and you know, it had hard battles, beating and banging. You know, tempers flaring. Drivers mad at each other after the race. And if that ain't Bristol, baby, I don't know what is. You know, so the leaders, yes, they tended to get out front. I agree with that. But the battles behind and you know the teams that took the gamble and stayed out because of the track position, they benefited drastically from that. And, you know, if you were up front, you kind of stayed up front until you made a mistake. And like I said, there's a huge hole in between three and four. I thought it was going to be a bigger issue than it ended up being, but there was just nonstop action. And I think it's the first race live for me of the season. So that had a lot to do with it as well. Usually I've gone to Daytona at this point and I've seen the cars, I've done all the thing. And you know, this was like the first experience there, and inject that into my veins all week.
Hell yeah. I agree. I thought it was an A for the event. I think this was the best dirt racing we've seen, with the cup cars. There wasn't any real battles for the lead, but it was still interesting with lots of battles from third on back. And Fox really focused on that. I think they did a really good job of showing those other battles going on and not just ignoring all that and following the leader for, you know, 100 or 200 or some laps. So I thought it was great, man. I really did.
There were battles for the lead, but they were clean. And that's what I liked about it. Like, and I think that's why maybe the battles up front really didn't get talked about, because, you know, Reddick and Bell were racing clean. Kyle was racing clean. Even we all thought it, even the three.
Yeah.
Racing clean. Wow. Like nobody got over aggressive. They were all driving. And you could tell the guys that figured it out and were having fun out there because they were racing up front. There might not have been a lot of the battles, but the battles were just the cars themselves on the racetrack the battle, I think.
Yeah, it was you versus the track, not you versus the competitors kind of too. I wish we did see a little bit more tire fall off or anything like that. I feel like everything I heard, there was like no changes in the tire. And
I think the Christopher Bell changed his tires once, and that was the he stayed up front. You know, you stay out front, he changed them once. And I will agree with this. And I was talking to a gentleman, I forget who it was, at the racetrack about it, like the dirt racing. And I was asking everybody there, like the local guys, how do you the guy that made the moonshine. I'm like, so what is the locals around here saying about the dirt? Like, how do they feel? And he even said, he goes, it's 50-50.
Yeah.
Like it's 50-50 on it, because the passion for the regular Bristol is there. And I think you have I think the other 50 is they like the shakeup of the schedule and it's something different. And that's what I like about it too. But I'm like, it's missing something. The live pit stops. Yeah. I don't like that. They don't like, cause that to me is part of the sport of NASCAR and the pit stops and not having those live pit stops. It was a little bit different. And that's one thing that and I know it's like they do that in the dirt. That's like kind of what they do. But I don't know if I really like not having live pit stops.
Can I say something too? So I texted you guys, I think it was during the race, that like I'm kind of over the Bristol dirt thing. And I think that came off unintendedly the way I didn't want it to come off. I loved what I saw. The racing was awesome. I've loved it all 3 years. It's eventful. It's exciting. And at the end of the day, I don't care if we're racing in outer space. If it's exciting, then give it to me. What I miss is Bristol. I don't want dirt racing to go anywhere. I think I think there's, I disagree with what Kyle Larson said, where dirt racing doesn't belong with NASCAR. I think there's a place for it. And here's why. And I know us three had this discussion, is you look at all other forms of motorsports, of major motorsports, and they stick to their, what they
their
know,
discipline.
Right?
Yeah.
Where with NASCAR, we have guys that we have a dirt race. We have a street race. We have oval racing. We have road course racing. We have all these different types of racing, and it's an endurance test throughout the whole season. And it's what makes our sport and our drivers the best in the world. And that's my opinion, because we get all these different pedigrees, these different types of racing, throw it all into one season, change it up, and go try to win a championship. That's why I believe that there is a place for dirt in our sport. I just don't know if it's at Bristol anymore.
I think the experiment worked. Sure. I do. I think it worked. I think it allowed the fans, certain fans, to realize it could work. These drivers and these cars can race on dirt and put on a hell of a show. I think the biggest problem is the fact that they did it to Bristol.
Yeah.
If you put a poll out there amongst any NASCAR fan and said, hey, like, you know, next year, we're no longer going to have Bristol dirt, but, you know, we're going to have so-and-so dirt race, I think everyone would be on board with that. I think no one would even question that. I think that's what they need to do. They're experimenting with the All-Star race, taking it here, taking it there, doing this, doing that. Well, how about we experiment with some other tracks and putting dirt down there? Or NASCAR, if this is the route you want to go to kind of mend these two, you know, type styles of racing together, build your own dirt track. You're buying up every other racetrack. Why don't you make your own racetrack? Build your own dirt track. That's where the NASCAR dirt race is always at. This is our dirt race. It, just like the Indy, you know, you have the bricks. Well, this is NASCAR. They built this racetrack. This is NASCAR's dirt track. This is where it is every year. They can work on it. They can prep it. It goes there every year. Don't cover up anything else. I don't think people would complain about that.
No, and you wonder what, and to the people where it's like, oh, NASCAR like doesn't belong on dirt. Like, this is the roots. This is the roots of NASCAR. Right. This is where it started. Right. It started on dirt tracks, you know.
Yeah.
And I think we just need to go to a purpose built track. Either mend the fences with Eldora, because Tony wanted us to come, and for some reason NASCAR didn't. And so either mend those fences or go to Knoxville. The trucks go to Knoxville anyways. So why not do a full cup weekend there too? You know,
we said that about Eldora or Knoxville last year, the year before. You know, you've got that intimate, real dirt track feeling.
Yeah.
Where maybe there is only 10, 20,000 fans at Eldora or at Knoxville Nationals. That's okay. It's a whole different feel, man. It's a local track feel with the big dogs doing it. I think that there is a place. Like Eric said, the experiment was tried, did it for 3 years. It worked. These cars can do it and put on a good-ass show. Now let's go find a long-term solution for this.
Yeah, I don't know about you guys, but I think the problem is threefold. You have dirt on Bristol, where Bristol purists don't want to see that. You know, you have a dirt race where maybe guys like Kyle Larson, who are dirt purists, don't want to see that in general. And then you have it on Easter, where a lot of people don't want to travel to the track on a holiday weekend. So you have three things kind of up against you, Matt. You're about
fourfold because the weather wasn't great. Sunday was fine. Sunday was fine, but Eric, it was freezing, wasn't it? Was that the coldest you've ever been at a NASCAR race?
Hands down. And I was in Atlanta when they gave us our tickets back because it didn't reach 45 degrees. It was. Yeah. There was frost Saturday morning when I woke up. There was frost all over my truck. It was just, it was cold. That's the coldest that I've camped in quite a while, where it definitely was down in the 30s at night for sure.
You'd be surprised how many people wait until a week out to get their tickets.
Oh yeah.
They saw that. Listen, I check the weather a week out before every race and I don't go to the tracks. And I saw what the weather was going to be like. So I can imagine the people who are waiting till the last second to buy tickets, see the race, and they're like, you know what? Not this year. We'll go next year. Or we'll go in the summer or fall when they come back. You know?
Playoff race,
I just feel bad for those people because, you know, we tend to just say, screw it. We're going to go regardless. If we have our ticket, nothing's going to prevent us from going. And I'm glad that I did go these last 2 years because, man, did I see an epic race there last year. And I saw another hell of a race this year. And, you know, they can't take that from me. So I'm glad I went and experienced it. And that's what you do as a fan. And if you love the sport, NASCAR is trying something new. Go there, try it out, and witness it. Because, like I said, I took that dirt because I kind of had the feeling that might be the last time they do that. So I'll always have a piece of that track that was there. Because if that is the last, hey, you know, it was a good one.
Yeah, it was a great one. We all gave it A's, so that's something. And I'm looking forward to getting that little vial. I might buy that Christopher Bell race win and put a little real dirt on it or
there
something.
There you go. Yes. There you go. See?
All right, you guys want to jump into the checkers and wreckers? Get moving along here.
Three wide for the lead. One lap to go.
It's this week's checkers and wreckers.
All right, since we started with Matt for the race grades, let's start with Eric for the checkers and wreckers. What'd you see? What'd you feel?
All right, so last week, if you were listening, you know that I wrecked EJ and his crew, and we talked about the curse of the king and the curse of the king's hat and all that. You never put it on. Don't do it. Don't do it. And how bad that they were running. And before the race, I had on one of my older, I think it was the Tide, Eric Jones cut off or whatever.
Yeah.
And I said, you know what? I said, no. I said, I got my new merch. I got my new Legacy Motor Club merch. I said, I'm going to finally wear it this weekend for the first time to hopefully swing the momentum.
Yeah.
And boys, I'll tell you what, in the beginning of that race, I'm like, well, I was about to rip both my shirts right off. But in the end, I watched my driver have a hell of an up and down day. From going three laps down in the beginning, getting run out the racetrack and getting held up by the 7, 10, 23. There was a pack that just couldn't move anywhere. Did a 360 spin twice on the racetrack, kept it going, come back to finish P14 and get a top 15 finish. So maybe in the beginning it didn't work, but towards the end, maybe, you know, getting this new gear is going to, you know, my superstition is going to help, because after the day he had to come back with a top 15, I will take that all day, every day. And hopefully this swings the momentum. So come on, EJ, let's go. That car was beautiful looking on racetrack, that flat black with just the gold. It looked sharp. I love that style of car. Always loved the 54 Monster car when it was just that flat black with the with the green. So I have to give him the checkers for wrecking him last week, but my real checkers goes to Austin Dillon.
All right. Okay.
We all were talking about, well, Whitey, you know, I sent him a snap. I needed the WSS and I'm trying to do all this. And he's like, man, he goes, Austin Dillon up front, won his heat, has a car, but it's Austin Dillon. Can't trust him.
He wrecked out the year before. He wrecked out the year before. That's why.
And you know what? I don't think anybody had faith in Austin Dillon staying up front during that race. But I got to give AD credit, man. I don't know what, you know, was underneath the hood of that car or if it's Kyle rubbing off on him a little bit there. But, man, both those cars were good on Sunday. And, you know, for once here, Austin Dillon beat out Kyle Busch and he had the better car that day.
Can I tell you, so like you said, for the listener at home, I've been doing this Whitey speed score thing for fantasy where I have all these different formulas and they're pulling all this information from practice and qualifying and past race performance and all this stuff, like really putting some work into it. And for Bristol, because there was no practice, I'm like, man, what am I going to do? So I start pulling all this data from last year and everything. And he qualified really well last year, too. And he's won in Eldora. And Austin Dillon grew up on the dirt, too. Like, he did a lot of dirt racing in his time. And I didn't have
faith. But it's still Austin Dillon. You know what I mean? It's like,
It's still Austin Dillon, and I didn't have faith. Well, Bree also likes to take a look at the Whitey speed score, and then she does her own research and stuff too. She was gonna play Austin Cindric because Austin Cindric was pretty quick.
I said he had a car.
He had a car too. And I said to her before we left for Easter dinner, I go, you want to know what? play Austin Dillon instead of Austin Cindric. And to
I thought you were going to say she played the wrong Austin and got it right.
No, she played Austin Dillon. It saved her fantasy lineup. She got third for the week. She's still in first. I, on the other hand, did not have any faith in Austin Dillon, and I came in 17th this week. Oh, boy, was it rough. So, yeah, I like it, though. Give credit where credit's due. Austin Dillon, earned that one.
Yeah.
How about your wreckers?
So, my wreckers, I kind of already hinted or said it earlier, is just Chase Briscoe. It wasn't a crazy egregious move. It wasn't anything like that. But the reason I'm wrecking him is this is back-to-back, same-style races where – he's going in there, going for the win, and moving somebody out of the way. And neither times did he come out with the win because of it. And it's just more of a reputation thing for me. I like Chase Briscoe. I think he's a great talent in the sport, but I don't want to see him go down the same road as Chastain.
Yeah.
You saw Briscoe at, CODA with Denny Hamlin. His instance there where, you know, runs him. So he's starting to get this reputation of moving people in the front for these wins and not ended up getting the win anyway. So I see a pattern of him taking out good cars. And to me, it's just worrisome. Wasn't a lot for me to wreck. I had a great weekend. It was a blast. So the little minor thing like that at the end of a race, I think the Blaney being in my fantasy lineup had a lot to do with me wrecking him too.
Oh, yeah.
Which up until that point, I think it would have been fine, my fantasy. And then I see that happen. So, it was fun chirping a Briscoe fan too after the race. So, I just like to see him clean it up a little bit during those green, white checkers.
I see where you're coming from. Cause I'll expound on that too. Matt, what's your checkers and wreckers for the weekend?
So my checkers and wreckers are actually intertwined here. My checkers is going to go to Michael McDowell. So not only for an 11th place finish, but the guy did not one, but two spinoramas and just kept it moving. And I thought that was fantastic. He still drove his balls off to an 11th place finish, like I said. And just real quick on Michael McDowell, you know, I remember the days, Eric, I'm sure you do too. I remember the days just a few years ago when McDowell was a 25th to 35th place car and just kind of an afterthought week in and week out. And now him and really in Front Row Motorsports seem to continue getting better and better. And, you know, he's not
left and right for that team. They're getting top 15s like it's nothing now. And it really is impressive. I said it last week where it was like their third one in a row where like both cars were in top 15. Like,
yeah, Todd Gilliland got eighth.
I have it literally written down. You know, he's not a perennial top five or top 10 team, but he is a perennial top 15 finisher now. And there's also a handful of races throughout the season that he gets a legit crack at winning too. So, I mean, just to see Michael McDowell and Front Row Motorsports just really progress quite well throughout the past X amount of years. It's just it's a fun little, it almost reminds me of Furniture Row Racing, of how they did it. And then eventually got to a point where Marty won them a championship.
I'm sure the 500 money goes a long way too. Oh, yeah. To that team.
And just a slow burn and just a team just, you know, getting money from getting good finishes and just putting it in the right places and just developing and building. You get a Daytona 500 win, you put that money towards the right stuff, and it seems like they're a perennial top 15 team now. So I think that's pretty cool.
Where did he finish this week? 11th?
11th.
Do you want to take a guess what number he was on the Whitey speed score in terms of the chart?
11th.
12th. I was one off. Whitey speed score, don't lie.
And you know what, Matt? Credit to McDowell for sticking through and staying with that team.
He's very loyal to them.
He loves, like, sticking with, like,
yeah.
Like, he, if you think about it, how many other drivers has had been on the same team, same sponsor, besides like the Lowe's 48 car, the FedEx car? Like, that Lowe's and Michael McDowell car go together. Like, it's almost It's almost up there with the Jimmy Johnson and Lowe's thing. Like, it's, yeah, he's recognizable.
He's the face of Loves. And they, yeah, they like Loves as a company. I heard it on Dave Moody. He was talking about it one day. They absolutely love having Michael McDowell represent their company in the sport and stuff too. And last year, I think he was in a contract year. Someone asked him, like, oh, are you interested in like maybe finding better opportunities? He said, no, I'm sticking here. And honestly, the loyalty's paying off. And this shouldn't shouldn't have been a surprise on dirt either, because the first year of Bristol Dirt, I think he finished 12th. Last year of Bristol Dirt, he finished 9th, and then this year he follows it up with 11th place finish. So the guy is, after two spins, the guy's solid, and he has no dirt background either. So good on him.
So yeah, just to bring it on home and wrap a bow on this, like I said, my checkers and my records go together. So Fox not showing the Michael McDowell spins is just egregious on all fronts. So the first spin, Eric, you were at the track. I was telling you before we started recording, the first spin didn't get shown until 5 minutes later after a commercial break went down. And then the second spin, the broadcast booth, Tony, Clint, and Mike Joy were like, oh my God, he just did it again. Michael McDowell just did it again. Like, they were like super excited for once in their lives about something that happened on track. And it took a whole, I don't know, 5 or 10 Bristol laps for Fox to show the replay of the second one that the booth just reacted to. And it's just like over and over again, you know, we just watched a video. Whitey, I don't know the gentleman's name who made the video about all the stuff that Fox has done, but like, yeah, I'm going to keep beating that drum. I don't care if our listeners are sick of us trashing Fox. I hate Fox. I hate their broadcasts. I did find out, I guess, recently, I don't know if this is true or not, but from what I saw is Fox, NASCAR and Fox has a new race director. And if that is the case, like, this guy like needs to get fired. He just needs to lose his job, move on to a different sport, because he clearly doesn't know what he's doing. He has no control over that truck, because week in, week out, lap in, lap out, they just fail on so many different levels every time.
And Whitey, like, I don't know that video you sent us.
Yeah.
I don't know who that gentleman is.
Bravo to that guy.
Yeah.
But it was probably the most well broken down thing about the broadcast and like, where it was and where it is now and the differences. And it is eye opening and mind blowing how much better the broadcasting used to be to now.
Yeah, I'll give this guy credit. He has 65,000 views on this video. So if you're watching us, chances are it's probably been suggested to you. But it's Elite Precision 29, and the name of the video is NASCAR on Fox has become atrocious. And he hit every single point. And like you
what
said,
is it, 12 minutes or 14 minutes?
It's like 19 minutes. But
19 minutes, but it's an easy 19-minute watch. It was like I stopped what I was doing because you guys were talking about it. And I was like, all right, I have to check this out. And like 10 minutes into it, I'm like, this guy just point after point after point. It's like we've been saying this all along. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did a great job, especially comparing and contrasting where it was in the 2000s, early 2000s, mid 2000s, and today. And it's just been going downhill ever since, you know? So, I think it's quality. It's a quality, records. And I think it's very valid. And yeah, I don't know, man, what are you going to do? At least now that you say it's a new guy, it kind of makes a little bit more sense, but like what the fuck's been going on the last couple seasons anyways. Yeah. All right. I'm up, right? My checkers and records. So
PDR.
Kind of like Matt, I have to give my checkers to Ricky Stenhouse Jr. And I'm wondering if we're looking at a Michael McDowell type progression, because Ricky won the Daytona 500. He didn't really do anything spectacular at Bristol Dirt, but I think he needs a bit of credit for just another solid run since Daytona. You know, when a guy like Ricky wins the 500, you automatically think, like, what's he going to do? That's one less place in the playoffs, kind of a wasted spot. But it seems like the team is running well, at least early on. He has 3 top 10s in this season, 2 top 5s and a win. Just a solid day for Ricky. He got a top 10 on a road course for the first time ever at COTA. He did well at Bristol Dirt the first year. I don't remember what he did last year, so it's no surprise he's a big dirt guy too. But just to see those cars run well. I like it for the team. I like it for Brad Doherty, and I like it for Ricky, because if like we said earlier, if you've been listening to this podcast for a long time, we're all kind of rooting for Ricky, even though he's in the back for some reason. I like him, and man, I mean, something's got to give. He's a Daytona 500 champion.
You know what money will do, with this next gen car. I feel like if he has this same win in the old gen car, the money that you get from this doesn't matter, because it's lost in the engineering to the other teams. But this new car allows, when you get a win like the 500, that money, you know,
it's a huge boost.
You could use that more because, you know, the parts, you don't have to spend on the engineering to make these parts anymore. It's, you could put into other aspects of your race team. And, you know, like you said, you saw it with McDowell. We thought the same thing. McDowell wins the 500. What is he going to do with that wasted playoff spot?
Yeah.
He had the best season he's ever had.
Yeah.
And he raced well. So,
Ricky might
500, got money, put it elsewhere, get the team going. I like that.
Yeah, because not only that, like, now you have money to invest in resources like people. You know, you could go out and get a better crew chief or better engineers. Like, who knows? It all starts, like we said, from the bottom to the top. Like, those guys wrenching on those cars are the most important parts to getting the cars on track. My wreckers, Kyle Larson for fucking my fantasy day, man, because I had him and Priest. I wasn't going to play either of them. He runs guys like this all the time. In fact, Denny Hamlin called him out on it on his podcast on Monday, and they're like best friends. They go golfing and hang out all the time. The DBC guys said the same thing. And if you go back 5 months to our podcast from post Vegas, I said the same thing last year because I was noticing a trend. He does it to his teammates. He did it to Bubba. That's why Bubba turned him. I still don't agree with hooking a guy in the right rear, but I understand the frustration because apparently it's a pattern. It's apparently been happening a lot longer than any of us have noticed, and we started noticing it last year. He runs guys all the way up the track all the time, and not only did it ruin Priest's day, it ruined his day too because he runs Priest up in the track. Priest bends something, which eventually leads to the toe link getting broken. So then Priest gets pissed off. He's stuck in the back, and he goes and he does the same exact thing to Kyle Larson. Then Kyle Larson gets out of the car, and he, in his press conference, he's like, oh, well, it happened like an hour before that. I figured we could be like adults. Well, no, you reap what you sow. And that's why I'm giving my second checkers to Ryan Priest for taking care of business in the race it happened. Get shit done in the race it happened. Don't go and talk about it to the media. Don't go about it and make people speculate for 6 months. Did he actually get him? Did he not? Nah, just fucking do it when you get the opportunity. Fuck Kyle Larson. And dude,
Priest is a short track asphalt guy. Those short track asphalt guys are nuts.
Yeah, they don't take any shit.
Look what happens at Bowman Gray all the time.
Exactly. I appreciate it. I really like that. But again, it fucked me because I
ride a car. It's not like he didn't have a car.
Exactly.
He had a great car. And it's like, I think that's like Larson's biggest thing was like, oh, like, I don't know. I didn't really race much about him. Like, he hasn't been in Cup in the last couple of years. Like, I kind of thought those are some shitty shots.
Real disrespectful.
And it's like,
yeah, real disrespectful. And
it was like, dude, like, okay, like, now I kind of get it even more after those comments was like, okay, you didn't race around the guy more. So then you're just going to automatically say, I'm a champion. I'm Kyle Larson. I'm going to run you in the wall. This is my area. I'm the dirt guy. Move out of my way. You know, you got to respect me and give me that out of the way. You lift.
Yeah.
Well, Priest, guess what? Priest, whew, man, he's an intimidating looking dude. I'll tell you that when he gets out of that race car. He looks like he's a big old boy, shaved head. And he just looks like he's ready to go. And, you know, I do agree. I applaud Priest for standing his ground on racetrack and saying, you know what? I think that's Priest knowing he's going to be around this sport for a little bit. And I think that's Priest knowing that he's going to get better and work on that car. And there's going to be a time when Kyle Larson will know Ryan Priest's name.
Yeah.
I like it. But yeah, that's my checkers and wreckers for the week. My fantasy lineup was shit. Oh, and fuck Chase Briscoe too for taking out Blaney. I had Blaney in the lineup. Man, I had Kyle Busch in the lineup. He got taken out near the end too. Oh my God, was it a fucking disaster?
All good cars though, Whitey. All good cars. Just they were the ones in the incidents.
And so don't. You want to kill me? I even texted you guys. I go, I was playing the Whitey speed scores to a T. I had Christopher Bell in there. I go, you want to what? I've used Bell more than anyone else. I'm swapping Bell for Priest. So watch Christopher Bell win the race. And of course he did. But we got to talk about the loser too here on the Bumper Run podcast. Every podcast loves to, do you guys have anything else to add to the race weekend?
We covered it, man. I thought it was excellent.
Yeah. All right. If that is
the loser, Cody Ware, right?
No. Cody Ware never raced.
He didn't race.
It was one.
Again, don't get
biggest
me
loser of the weekend, I think.
Biggest loser of the weekend for sure.
Life.
Yeah. So here on the Bumper Run podcast, everyone loves to talk about the winner, Christopher Bell, on a Monday. But we also like to talk about the loser. And this week, unfortunately for our buddy Shrey's wife, Kimmy, it was one Joey Logano. He wrecked out midway through the race. He had a rough day from the start, too. He got sandwiched between Bubba and Byron early, but was able to move on through throughout the first stage. Just a lot of mayhem through the field. I don't actually know when he got taken out, to be honest with you. It was on like lap 96 or whatever. Early on in the race, I had one eye on the race and then one eye on my family during Easter dinner. Yeah,
it was coming out of four towards the checker. There's a whole group of them that kind of spun and turned around. And he actually was involved in a couple where like he wasn't involved, but then he got run into or wrong place, wrong time. So he got pinballed around quite a bit.
Okay. And then
I got a nice old picture of him. He was when in his garage, when he pulled in, he was done for the day. Took a nice picture of that. I'm gonna frame that on my wall. I'm gonna have him sign it at Pocono. I'm gonna picture him in the garage.
Nice. I like that. Did you send that one to Kimmy too, so she saw it?
Oh yeah.
Man, fuck Joey Logano. Poor Kimmy. I feel bad for her. Anyways, we got a pick a lane, and I still never made a goddamn bumper for the pick a lane segment. I just have one. Future Bristol Dirt. I know we kind of speculated on throughout the episode. I would like to see it come back.
I'm going to leave it at this. I like the future of dirt.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I think Matt agrees. All right.
Me too. Me too.
Marty, you got to come back with me.
Yeah,
you should.
Where?
The next NASCAR Cup race.
We're powering through the last part here. There's nothing else to say about Bristol Dirt. We thought it was awesome. If you didn't like it, you didn't like it, and we hope it continues somewhere, at least. We're heading to the hot dog capital of Virginia.
I love hot dogs.
We're going to Martinsville. Trucks on Track, Martinsville, Friday, 7:30 on FS1 for the Long John Silver's 200.
I love Long John Silvers,
dude.
So many hot puppies during the race.
I love Long John Silvers.
Friday, I might have to go to LJS and get get some Long Johns before LJS, the race.
Dude, let's go.
Never mind. That was off camera that we were talking, but boy, talk about belly problems. The next day, Xfinity on Track Saturday, 7:30 on FS1 for the call, 811.com before you dig 250. For real though, before you dig any major holes, you got to call that number just to make sure you're not digging on power lines. You don't want to accidentally kill yourself. And then Cup on Track, 3 p.m. on FS1 on Sunday for the NOCO 400. I don't know what NOCO is. Practice and qualifying are at 4:30. 35 on Saturday though, and we have some picks to go over from last week.
I'm out of it bad. Our like in this I am bad. I was last year I was up there in the front most of the season, and I am paying for it big time this year.
You want to what though? You're not in bad shape. It's still early in the season. We got a lot of racing to go because I was in your position last year and I was able to come back a little bit. So this past week at Bristol Dirt, I picked Daniel Suarez. He got me 12 points. Eric picked Kyle Busch. He should have got you way more. He got you 19 points. And then Matt, the Statman Riley, if you listen to his pick, you won yourself some money. He told you to pick Christopher Bell. Christopher Bell was, of course, the winner. And Matt was true to his word. He put some money down, and he won some money on Christopher Bell. I hope you did the same. Unfortunately for you, Matt, that means you pick last. You got 52 points.
Hey, that's my second exacto of the season, and I think the fourth for the podcast, third or fourth for the podcast.
It's the third for the podcast, the second for you. I picked Redick for Coda, and he got me the win. We had a couple second places around here, too.
I have a second, I think,
I think so, too. I forget which one. Maybe it was Larson at Vegas got you second place? I don't remember, but we're doing pretty well. Keep on listening and put your bets in early before practicing qualifying if you have a hunch on these guys. That way you get better odds. I didn't bet this week because the odds dropped after those heats and stuff. There just wasn't enough money in the possibilities and stuff like that. But that means, Matt, you pick last. Eric, you pick second. And I pick first. And for the first time in a long time, I know exactly who I'm going to pick.
Wow.
I haven't picked him yet.
I'm going random. I'm already down in the hole. I already know my guy, and it's not going to be off your guy's radar completely.
He's a guy I haven't picked yet. He's already got a couple wins on the season. He's already got a couple wins in Martinsville. In fact, he had two of them last year.
Damn it.
It's the reason we call him Slick Willie Two Clocks, because he won himself two clocks in one weekend. I am going with one William Byron to do it again in the spring once again and win himself another clock.
All right. Well, it's on me, and I'm going with somebody that I didn't pick yet this year. I don't think somebody that I have high praise for, someone that I think this season they're showing that they have speed and they're going to be a team to mess with. And he's having his best season in the last, I'd say, four. I'm going with the number six, Brad Keselowski.
Okay.
Wow. You want,
I like it, and I'll tell you why. Because when he was at Penske, he was really good at short tracks a lot of those weekends.
Him and Logano at Martinsville, I saw some epic battles between those two there. And I just think maybe the speed's there, the fire's under Brad, and let's go get one here.
I like it. Reminder, though, that's the second time you picked Brad Keselowski this season. We only have three shots throughout the season.
I must have picked him for a speedway race then.
You did. You picked him for Atlanta, which he got you 45 points. Great pick overall. Yeah. But just to keep in mind. And Matt, who are you going with for Martinsville?
So I haven't. I'm going to go. I'm also going to go out a little bit on a limb here, but not really, but a little bit. His teammate just won. I have not picked him yet this year, but his teammate just won. Toyota's kind of got momentum. He won out in LA. He's due for a points-paying race win. His name is on the walls at the track. I am going with Martin Truex Jr.
All right, we'll see. We'll see if him and his crew chief made up after the whole entire debacle down at Richmond, and he could get himself a short track win. He was in place to do it at the last short track we were at. We'll see if he could do it this weekend. Our playoff picture, we are eight races into the 2023 season, and we have seven different winners. Ricky Stenhouse Jr., Kyle Busch, William Byron with two, Joey Logano, Tyler Reddick, Kyle Larson, and Christopher Bell just added his name into the playoff list. Could it be Slick Willie B getting his third win of the season? Could it be Brad Keselowski getting his first win as an owner driver? Or can Martin Truex Jr. put it back in victory lane in Martinsville? We will find out this Sunday, 3 o'clock on FS1 for the NOCO 400. And we will break it all down for you right here on the Bump and Run podcast Monday night, back to our regular scheduled time. For Matt the Statman Riley, for Eric Daytona Ron, I'm Michael D. White saying have a good night.
The Bump and Run.
There